Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, Donald Trump continues to fight with a Gold Star family. He is being blasted in a letter from 17 Gold Star families demanding he apologize. We'll have an interview with Mr. and Mrs. Khan right here, News One Now on TV One. Nina Turner was a Hillary Clinton supporter. Then she switched to Bernie Sanders. All of a sudden, Jill Stein wanted her to be a VP choice, run with her on the Green Party ticket. We'll talk with Nina Turner right here and also talk about what went down in Philadelphia. She says she was disrespected by the Hillary Clinton campaign. Charter schools in America, the NAACP calls for a moratorium on charter schools. But charter school supporters say that is a shameful stance when it comes to black parents who are saying they want more school options. We'll talk with Hillary Shelton of the NAACP, plus Steve Perry as well. Also, folks, get out the vote. We'll break down various apps with Stephanie Humphrey that can help you register to vote, also give you the registration deadlines for 10 states. All that, News One Now, starts right now.
You have sacrificed nothing and no one.
She probably, maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say, you tell me, but plenty of people have written that.
The backlash continues against Donald Trump when it comes to the parents of Humayun Khan, a Muslim American army captain killed in Iraq in 2004. Veterans are declaring war on Trump, accusing him of going, quote, out of bounds with his latest comments. Of course, this all began when the family of Khan spoke at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Of course, many people have seen that particular speech. It has reduced folks to tears. It was a speech not even written by Mr. Khan. The reality is Donald Trump says he was angered by it. And in fact, this is what Donald Trump tweeted. Mr. Khan, who does not know me, viciously attacked me from the stage of the DNC and is now all over TV doing the same. Nice. Well, yesterday, 17 families released a letter, votevets.org, blasting Donald Trump, saying it's time for him to apologize. But Khazir Khan says they're way past an apology. Also, Senator John McCain on yesterday also blasted Donald Trump, saying his comments against Khazir Khan and Khan's family are absolutely wrong. I had an opportunity yesterday to talk to the Khans right here in the hallways of News One Now, and here's our conversation.
It's the love and affection and support had been overwhelming. It has affirmed our belief that America is alive, America is decent, America is loving, America is caring. Yeah, there had been some burdens on the family, on especially Mrs. Khan. She's not a political person. Neither am I. We are very private, but she's in a very delicate situation. So, and she will speak how she had been feeling since then. But it has been wonderfully overwhelming with support, with kindness of people and acknowledgement of the sacrifice of our son. So it's been wonderful.
Mrs. Khan?
Actually, it was very tiring and very heartbreaking for me because I have to say again and again how I felt that day. And I don't appreciate this because that was just my feeling that I could not explain that time. How everybody's asking me again and again when everybody saw how much love I got from them without saying anything. I really appreciate and I love America too. All American all over the world, thank you very much for your support.
And with the death of your son, they are seeing the face of Muslim Americans who believe in this country, who serve this country, who love this country.
That is so true that the recognition, the tribute that they paid to Humayun and his sacrifice, and is an acknowledgement that we are all equal citizens of this country. This candidate continues to divide us. He continues to create the fear of division. Fear mongering is not good political practice at this time. So it heartens us to see that we are as equal, as good as any other person. And that is the beauty and that is the strength of this country.
Former longtime advisor Donald Trump, who throws out that you are a double agent for the Muslim Brotherhood. And just another example of pushing these things to the extreme.
That is, this is nothing new. In the history of this country, such sentiments have always existed. Look at what they did to our leaders of civil rights. The history is there. I don't need to name. We can simply look back and we see that these things are, these burdens we have to carry, we have to bear to be on the right side of the time. We are on the right side of the time and they are on the wrong side of the time. The time will prove it and the history will prove it. We are writing the better chapter of the history.
Mrs. Khan, is it heartening to you that your husband holds up that pocket U.S. Constitution and now all of a sudden the Constitution has reappeared on the bestsellers list? Folks are buying the U.S. Constitution because of what your husband did.
I think he always had that, always, and he has always given to the people, whoever comes and visit us, even from, if they are from, you know, not United States, they are from abroad, from Pakistan or Iran or Saudi Arab or anywhere. He has given them this because he feels proud of this. He's very proud of this. And if it's on best-selling list, I think it should be always on best-selling list. Not just because he said it, it should be always, because it gives you very strength.
Now, you're going to make it perfectly clear, the both of you, that no matter how many folks try to attack, how many folks try to tear down, that you are not going to be silenced and speaking up for your son, speaking up for the country?
We will be betraying his sacrifice and his mission if we now say, oh, well, this is a little too much and we are going to sit home and enjoy this political process and let a schoolyard bully, I don't call him bully, I call him a schoolyard bully, that is going to deter us and malign the sacrifice of not only Captain Humayun Khan, but hundreds of thousands of other young men and women of all color and race and ethnicities that are in Arlington Cemetery. Their message is the message of defense of good America, the message of strong America, the message of equal America, the message of equal rights America.
Yesterday, President Barack Obama was speaking to disabled veterans in Atlanta, and he addressed the controversy.
Let me say this. No one has given more for our freedom and our security than our Gold Star families. Michelle and I have spent countless hours with them. We have grieved with them. Our Gold Star families have made a sacrifice that most of us cannot even begin to imagine. They represent the very best of our country. They continue to inspire us every day, every moment. They serve as a powerful reminder of the true strength of America. And we have to do everything we can for those families and honor them and be humbled by them.
Joining us now, folks, on FaceTime from Cincinnati, Rula Alush, board chair for CARE, Council on Islamic Relations, and of course, in the studio, we're joined by Faraji Muhammad, the host of Listen Up, co-host of the Larry Young Morning Show, WEAA 88.9 FM in Baltimore, Christopher Prudhomme, president, Vote America Now, and Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver, author of How Exceptional Black Women Lead, David Swerdlich, assistant editor, Washington Post. Rula, I want to start with you. Donald Trump and Mike Pence have talked about this, and Trump says this is not about the cons, It's about radical Islamic extremism. But the reality is, that's not what the Khans were speaking about. They were talking about their son. They were talking about Donald Trump's temperament. Do you have a problem with all of a sudden trying to make this about radical Islamic extremism, as opposed to the issue that is Donald Trump insulting the parents of a Muslim American soldier?
Good morning, and thank you for having me on. Yes, of course, I have a problem with that. This is a situation where we've got somebody running for the highest elected office in our land who is bullying a Gold Star family and now wants to flip the switch and talk about something different. But the reality is that he isn't showing honor or respect to a Gold Star family whose son made the ultimate sacrifice for our values. And for him to continue to harass them and attack them, it's indefensible. They are people that, you know, for me, I'm so inspired by and proud of them. Proud of them when they came out and gave their speech at the convention, but also just even the comments to you. They're speaking for American rights and American values that we should all be looking to uphold.
Numerous Republicans have criticized the comments of Donald Trump, but unlike Senator John McCain, they're not criticizing Donald Trump. How can you criticize the comments and not criticize the person making the comments?
Yeah, I don't know how people are in good conscience making that decision. Certainly the family should be respected and should be honored, particularly the sacrifice that their son made and that the sacrifice that the family makes for them. And his specific attacks against Mrs. Khan were specifically, I mean, he's using tired and played out stereotypes about Muslim women and about trying to say that she didn't have a voice. And clearly her voice is being heard since the time on that stage. But even on the stage, she didn't speak, but she spoke through her heart and through her presence. It was a graceful and dignified presence. And quite frankly, it spoke a thousand words.
Do you believe that what we're witnessing here is Donald Trump, Governor Mike Pence, not being too particularly happy with America being sympathetic to a Muslim American family, that this is an effort for them to continue to denigrate Muslim Americans?
Yeah, he's built a campaign around racism, Islamophobia, xenophobia, and all forms of bigotry. He's trying to divide the country. And what's been beautiful to see is the Khans being uplifted by people and supported by them, as they should be. They're a Gold Star family, and they're speaking about values that we all should come together to uphold. And that certainly seems very contrary to what that campaign seems to want to do.
All right. Rula Alush with CARE. We appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I want to go to our panel here. So, folks, again, the one thing you do not do in this country, you do not attack veterans. That's what Donald Trump did, and that's why he's getting a pushback.
Yeah, and Roland, I think, you know, you mentioned at the top that the campaign, the Trump campaign has pushed back and said this is not about the veteran service. This is about talking about radical Islamic terror. But that's exactly wrong. As your guest pointed out a second ago, not only is it about the sacrifice of the family, but if you go out, I actually went out to Arlington National Cemetery on Saturday, went to the gravesite of Captain Khan, and you look out there, and that's what you see. The uniform graves, mostly crosses, but crescents for Muslims, Jewish stars, Buddhist symbols, etc. It's everybody the same there, being sacrificing for the country, and there's no hoopla, there's no politics, there's no political campaign out there. It's just the soldiers who lost their lives, and that's what Donald Trump seems to have lost sight of.
Well, here, Donald Trump cannot handle criticism.
No, I mean, there's
a very easy way to say, I understand that, first of all, I appreciate the service of their son. I appreciate their sacrifice. Yeah. Everyone's entitled to their own perspective. Thank you very much. He cannot do that.
No, he's not a man. He cannot do that. I mean, look at what happened. His initial reaction had nothing to do with radical Islam. It had to do with, oh, well, he attacked me first. That, you know, it sounds like a 2-year-old. Come on now. I have a 13-year-old that has more maturity than Donald Trump. And how old is he? 70? This man is narcissistic. He's psychopathic. He is someone who has no empathy at all, apparently. And what other better way to show it than to see him attack and denigrate over and over again the parents of a dead child who gave his life for this country that he is claiming to want to lead?
I certainly agree, and I think it sets a poor example, especially for the younger generation upcoming watching Mr. Trump. I think that the mother obviously didn't want to speak for her own reason. She's grieving, and I had a chance to read a couple articles about that. At the end of the day, it's their right to do what they want to do, and he certainly should have been a lot more empathetic and a lot more respectful in understanding their situation.
Yeah, those are two words he has never shown. He didn't understand the definition of, Faraji.
You know, the big thing that I saw from this, and billionaire investor, talked about this, Warren Buffett, said that, you know, he has made a lot of money, and he's admitted, I have sacrificed nothing. So how can a man of Donald Trump's stature stand in front of a couple of parents and then at the end of the day, who just lost his son, and said he sacrificed when he was just building a bunch of buildings? Mm-hmm. So I guess that gets to the heart of the matter. The humanity is not there. And this situation, Roland, is more troubling, not because of Donald Trump, because Donald Trump is who he is. But for the folks that continue to support Donald Trump at this point, to see that there are some real big character flaws in this man.
Absolutely.
And some inconsistencies in how in his view, and as you said, talking about looking at just the lack of humanity and the morality of it, that speaks a lot, especially for a president who is looking to represent all Americans.
Also, go ahead.
Not only did he not sacrifice anything, this man dodged the draft not once, not twice, not three times, not four times, but five times.
Wow.
Five times he put in a deferment and did not serve.
Bones,
so he is the
bones,
last
bones
one.
Bone spurs in his feet.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Bone spurs in his feet. But now at 70, he has perfect health. What happened? Did it sort of miraculously cure itself over time?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, folks, when we come back, we'll talk Green Party. That is, Jill Stein has made her choice. One of the folks she wanted to be her VP was former Ohio State Senator Nina Turner, a big-time supporter of Senator Bernie Sanders. We will talk with Nina next. Also, the NAACP calls for a moratorium on charter schools. How does that view work when it comes to black parents who overwhelmingly say they want their kids to go to a charter school? All that next. News One Now, TV One.
Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, Green Party candidate Jill Stein has made her choice for her VP running mate. His name is Ajamu Baraka. He has fought for human rights for more than 30 years. He has roots with the Black Liberation Movement and was an anti-apartheid and Central American solidarity struggle activist. Baraka was also the founding executive director of the U.S. Human Rights Network, which seeks to hold the United States to international human rights agreements. Stein made the announcement on yesterday via a tweet saying, quote, honored to announce human rights champion Ajamu Baraka as my VP running mate. Now, she was considering former Ohio State Senator Nina Turner to be her running mate. She, of course, was a big-time supporter of Senator Bernie Sanders. And, in fact, Nina Turner joins us right now on News One Now on TV One. Nina, glad to have you on the show.
Thank you,
Bill. She wants you to consider it. How serious were you considering this offer?
It was something that happened over the weekend. It was really quick. And, by Monday, I had made my decision. You know, you were at the convention, a lot had went on at that convention. And, you know, I had witnessed a lot with Democrats just over my time in the Democratic Party. And my major goal is to shake things up and to make sure that I continue to stay a reformer. So, you know, I did give it some thought, but I have been a lifelong Democrat, not because of a party apparatus, but because of the principles and the values. And I do believe that I can still continue to fight within that party, even though I've been disappointed over the years.
Disappointed, some say disrespected. In Philadelphia, you were supposed to introduce Senator Bernie Sanders, his name in nomination. You say the Clinton campaign blocked that from happening?
Yes, Roland, that is true. I had a conversation with the senator, and not to go into all the details of what he told me in a private conversation, but that was just the bottom line. It didn't happen. I'm so glad that my sister, Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, got a chance to do it. But it was a little disheartening. I'm also told that there was a video that the senator wanted to play that had my image in it, and they refused to allow that video to be played. It was me, Tulsi, and also Killer Mike prominently displayed in that video as well. So that's just a little petty, but you know, I'm going to move on and continue to fight. And I continue to say that I'm from the Shirley Chisholm wing of the Democratic Party, unbought and unbossed, or maybe it's better to say I'm from the Fannie Hamer part of the Democratic Party. But I'm going to stay in, Roland, and I'm going to keep fighting this good progressive fight.
A lot of folks keep demanding that you endorse Hillary Clinton for president. And it seems as if that's some type of litmus test. Do you believe that, from your vantage point, frankly, if you want to endorse, you can do so anytime between now and November.
Right.
Why the pressure?
I don't understand, Roland. I mean, especially since the candidate himself, the man with his name on the ballot, actually endorsed her. And not only did he endorse her, he said he's going to go throughout this country. You know, he's been a man of his word in that. He said he would support the Democratic nominee. And he also said he wanted to do everything in his power to defeat Mr. Donald Trump. He actually said those words even before the endorsement. So I don't understand what the big deal is. Usually who one is going to vote for is personal. But I seem to catch every time I'm interviewed, people want to know who I'm voting for and who I'm endorsing. You know, I went hard out there on that campaign trail, Roland, as you know, for Senator Bernie Sanders, but more so for the value proposition that he was standing up for. What I do endorse is making sure that the Democratic Party does everything that it said it was going to do in that platform, increasing the $15 minimum wage, taking marijuana off the federal Schedule I, protecting and expanding voting rights, which are still being, and I'm glad we had that win in North Carolina, but we have a long, long way to go, Roland. So I don't know why people get all caught up over the E word.
One of the things that also, I think, jumps out when we talk about this campaign, obviously, Senator Sanders had significant support all across this country. And folks have talked about how do you move forward. Do you mm-hmm. believe that Senator Sanders should take the organization that he built running for president and create another entity, not a third party, but create mm-hmm. an entity, much like MoveOn.org, much like Howard Dean's organization, that will serve as an apparatus that could run other candidates for local office, for state office, for congressional races, but also hold whoever is president accountable, even if it is Hillary Clinton?
I do, and I think he's beginning to work on that kind of project. The Sanders Institute, him and his wife, are organizing right now. And as we know, you know, we could have the greatest president in the world, but, you know, they can't do it alone, and they need strong people at all levels of government. And we need to bring that kind of pressure to bear. Unfortunately, we think loving somebody or supporting somebody means that we always have to agree, and you're vilified if you happen to have a thought that is different from the person that you supported or you worked hard for. This democracy can only become better, become greater, if that tension is there. And, you know, to quote one of our strong abolitionists, Frederick Douglass, power concedes nothing without a struggle. It never has and it never will. So yes, Roland, I think he should do that. I think other organizations should crop up as well. I know that Democracy for America is really looking to give some technical support to some of the grassroots organizations that have been created because Senator Sanders ran for office.
All right, Nina Turner, we surely appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Ro.
All right, folks, when we come back, NAACP says no more charter schools built across the country. They want a moratorium, but two charter supporters say that's absolutely idiotic. Also, Black Lives Matter, they release a movement. They release a list of demands to counter criticism that they have no agenda. We'll break that down as well right here. News One Now on TV One is 25 minutes after the hour. Be sure to send me a tweet at Roland S. Martin or at News One, or go to our News One Facebook page. Back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Lee Ralph.
I'm Senator Vincent Hughes.
You've only got one vote. Use it.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
No new charter schools. That's the request from the NAACP at their national convention in Cincinnati. A resolution was approved calling for a moratorium on the expansion of charter schools. The resolution reads in part, charter schools have contributed to the increased segregation rather than diverse integration of our public school system, and that weak oversight of charter schools puts students and communities at risk of harm, public funds at risk of being wasted, and further erodes local control of public education. The resolution reaffirms the 2014 resolution, and the NAACP opposes the privatization of public schools and or public subsidizing or funding of for-profit or charter schools. Of course, it will not become official policy for the NAACP until its national board meeting later this fall. But so many charter schools are actually doing well. More than 3 million kids across the country are actually in charter schools. The question is, is this sound policy for African Americans? Joining us in the studio, Washington Bureau Director of the NAACP, Hillary Shelton, via FaceTime, Dr. Steve Perry, founder and head of schools for Capital Preparatory Schools, and also joining us via FaceTime, President of Democrats for Education Reform, Shavar Jeffries. So, Hillary, this particular resolution was offered from the floor. Was it a particular state, or did it come from the board?
It was from a particular state. The way our system is set up, any member of the NAACP in good standing can submit a resolution to be considered by the national organization at our national convention. This came up through the normal process of review and onto the floor of our convention just 2 weeks ago.
But here's a question: if you look at right now, and look, I'm a school choice supporter. If you look at what's happening in Harlem, you got thousands, 20,000. Parents on waiting lists to get into charter schools. Steve Perry had a school there in Hartford, Connecticut, thousands on a waiting list as well. Sounds to me like parents, especially black parents, are saying they want the option. And in fact, we did a poll here. Cornell Belcher, Democratic pollster, did this. 72% of black parents favor charter schools. Is the NAACP out of step with black folks?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, we're looking at exactly what's happening in charter schools. About 18 years ago, we came out with our first position on charter schools. And what we said was charter schools need to be at least the minimal standard of any public school. What we had during those times and thereafter were charter schools that were being put in place in many places to undercut many of the policies and protections civil rights has provided. Things like, for instance, making sure that teachers at least have a degree and are certified before they teach. That's a minimum standard. Many charter schools went around that and even hired teachers without degrees at all, creating all kinds of other problems. We had charter schools that were carpetbaggers. That is, they'd come in, and before they could figure out that the charter school was not providing the service, the charter school was gone. Now, look, you're right. There are some charter schools that have proven effective. But if you go back and talk to the assistant secretaries for civil rights in the Department of Education, the last two, you'll find all the suits that have been filed because charter schools have been utilized in places like Mississippi, mm-hmm. Alabama, and North Carolina as tools to maintain segregation. So in essence, that's why we're calling for a moratorium. We've got to take a closer look at this. There's a big problem with how these schools are being utilized in so many areas. Now, we can point to a few. There's a good one in New York that seems to be showing good results. There's a couple of schools other places. Few good results, but just a few.
No, I won't say few. I mean, I can show you a number of schools. Steve Perry, I want to go to you, your reaction to this resolution.
They couldn't be more out of touch if they ran full speed in the other direction. Americans are deciding with their feet that they want to go to better schools. And how dare the national office of the NAACP show that they're out of touch even with their own chapters. In fact, as I travel around the country, some of the biggest proponents of school choice are NAACP local chapters. They're the ones who bring people like you and me rolling in to talk about, guess what? The same thing. This is just another example of show. It's more proof that the NAACP has been mortgaged by the teachers union. And they keep paying y'all to say what they want to say. Recognize one of the first things he mentioned was the teachers. You want to know what happens when we don't have to go through the rules of certification? We're able to hire the five black males that I'm able to hire to be faculty here at Capital Prep in Bridgeport. That's five black males, three of whom went to Morehouse, which has no education school unless they go over to Spelman. So I'm able to bring in African-Americans to teach African-American children in the African-American community in which 90% of children are reading, writing, and doing math below grade level. Brother, if you really will children, then you'd recognize that it's not a few schools. In fact, it's more the rule than not. If you look at the Credo study, one of the things that you would find out is that the group that is most benefiting from school choice in general and charters in specific are African-American males. You want to stop the school-to-prison pipeline? Then stop sending black boys to failed schools that keep funding the NAACP through teachers union dues, man.
Hillary?
If you're really focused on it, hold on, Steve.
Hillary.
Well, first, it's probably a good idea to set aside who's being paid by who, especially since he works for a charter school and it pays his salary. That's not a good idea for this conversation.
No. Actually, he runs. I mean, he's an owner. He doesn't work for one.
No, he owns it. Gotcha. He makes a living. Exactly. Yeah. Thank you very much. Not a good idea to talk about who's paying for who for what.
Because, but you work for the NAACP, so do we therefore undermine what you're saying?
No. I'm just trying to say what our policy positions are, and I appreciate
the NAACP who's taking almost $500,000 from the teachers.
Let me just say that the issue very well is how these charter schools are being run. That's the issue on the table. I thought the idea was to take a good look at what's been happening. I've talked to both Russell and Ali from the Department of Education, who's the undersecretary who actually oversees enforcement of civil rights of our schools across the country, including charter schools. I'm telling you exactly how this stuff has worked. Secondly, if we look at the schools that were utilized, the places where the suits were filed, in places like Mississippi and Alabama and others, what you'll see is that indeed there was discrimination.
But here's a question. Why not call for a moratorium in those states as opposed to a national?
For a moratorium of the traditional schools in which over 90% of children can't read, write, or do math? Why? Because those teachers' associations are paying y'all. Your credibility has completely been impugned because your own local chapters don't support you.
Hold tight. 1 second. Shavar, I wanted to jump in here, then we'll go back to Hillary. Shavar?
Well, I want to say a few things. One is I think this conversation will be more fruitful we get past some of these character attacks. Steve is a legendary educator of our children, and NAACP over history has been one of the best proponents of civil rights in our community. But that said, charter schools have proven themselves throughout this country to change the lives of children of color. In many of our cities, they're a beacon of hope. The Credo Institute that was referenced earlier, that report shows that in the largest cities in the United States, the public charter schools are the best performing public schools in those cities and are frankly reversing achievement gaps in some cities where frankly some of the kids of color outperforming white kids in the suburbs. And so anything that works for children, we have to be able to support. We've in many of our cities for decades, our traditional public schools have failed our children, failed our communities. Do we have some excesses with some charter schools? Sure. Do we have even more excesses in many traditional public schools as well? Of course we do. And so wherever we find bad practice, we always have to regulate that. But overall, public charter schools throughout this country are doing tremendous work for our young people, particularly our young children of color. And we absolutely need everyone who cares about kids of color to support those schools that are doing a great job for our babies.
Hillary?
I would just take a good look on NAACP's website at NAACP.org. You see a good analysis of the challenges that we have with charter schools. Now, I'm not saying some of them aren't doing well. Some of them are. Some we've heard of as good examples of even what local public schools can do as well. But when charter schools are being utilized as a tool of segregation, when charter schools are being utilized as a tool to actually undereducate our children by putting teachers in place that have no degree, that have not been certified, then we have a problem. And those are the kind of charter schools we want to make sure do not continue to operate throughout our society. What we're calling for is a moratorium to be able to study
really
the issue to make sure and take a look at what's going on.
A lot of these premises Hillary is relying upon, frankly, are myths. And there's very little evidence to support that. Are there extraordinary excesses? Yes. But the data shows that overall, the charters are hiring highly qualified, competent educators who are doing a great job for our kids.
Steve?
Yeah, in addition to that, it's against the law to have even less than a majority. So in places like New York City, over 75% of the faculty have to be certified. Now, if certification were important, then the schools that have 95 and 100% of children who can't read, write, or do math at grade level, yet have 100% of staff certified, would be the problem. See, what happens is he's just speaking from the teachers union hymnal. That's all he's doing. This is not about what's good for children. It's not about what the parents are doing. You mentioned earlier, Roland, we ran a school that wasn't a charter school in Hartford, Connecticut. Over 2,700 children were on the waiting list. Their parents were making micro political decisions. They were saying they know what's best for themselves. And right now, Roland, as you and I speak, I'm in a charter school in a city, which is Bridgeport, which 94% of children are reading, writing, doing math below grade level. They always talk about us taking money from the traditional schools. We receive $11,000 per pupil. The school up the street, which is closed, by the way, for the summer, because you know you can't have them open during the summer. The same school in which every child who goes into those schools every single day during the school year is patted down. Those schools receive $15,000 per pupil and $100 million for a building. We get zero. Yet and still, our children right now in the room right on the other side of this wall are learning math. They have blazers and ties on because their parents are tired of it. Our children are part of a revolution, and it's high time that the NAACP woke up and recognized that this is our community. It's about the CP, not about the AFT and the NEA.
Well, let me just say once again, we want to make sure that the charter schools live up to the standards that are set out by our civil rights laws we fought so hard for. No excuses for not being able to meet those minimum standards.
Do you apply those same standards to the failed schools?
We want to make sure that every single school at least has what our children desire. In other words, a charter school should not start at the bottom and below the floor for public schools, but should start at that floor and move up from there.
Yeah, but what we're saying is applying those lines. We say the floor. Are you speaking of funding?
Standards. Standards and curricula.
There's just no evidence of that. I mean, honestly, these are just, and I respect Hillary and I respect NAACP deeply, but these are frankly tall tales.
What are you talking about?
There's very limited evidence of some of the things Hillary's talking about. In terms of public charter schools not meeting standards for kids. In fact, the public charter schools are generally outperforming standards for young people. And that's exactly why parents throughout our community, black, low-income families in our cities, they are flocking to charters. The parents are smart. They know what they're doing.
So these schools are
changing the lives of their kids, and that's why they're embracing them in tremendous numbers.
So, Hillary, here's my question. Before the national board votes on this, are you going to bring in a pair? Are you going to bring in a Bishop Jakes as a charter school in Dallas? Are you going to bring in the countless black churches across the country who actually have charter schools? African-Americans who I have personally met. In fact, we're sitting right here in D.C. Will you bring in Donald Hintz, who runs the extensive charter school here, network here in D.C., African-American, one of the most effective charter school networks in America. Will the board do that?
Well, let me say a couple things. What the board has already done is, this is a resolution that's coming up from our membership. The way things work for us at a very democratic, small D-based organization is, again, any member of the NAACP.
I got the resolution. What I'm saying is, are you going to bring in black folks who run charter schools to get their perspective?
Let me first start out by saying 2,200 black folks voted on this thing at our convention week before last. A lot of research has been done on a number of studies. Look at the Pew Foundation study, as a matter of fact. Look at the Department of Education study as well on the effectiveness
of are you going to bring in black people? No, black people who run charter schools to get their perspective. African Americans, I can give you a list.
Well, let me just say we'd be happy to take your list. I can give you a list of those who've already been considered. When the resolution was written and the information that came forth by those who moved forward, many, many studies were looked at before we got to this point.
Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying the NAACP, National Board is going to vote on a resolution calling for a moratorium on charter schools. I think the NAACP should talk to black people who actually run in charter schools, who are creating those schools for the benefit of educating black kids.
Well, let me say the charter schools have been reviewed at every level, not only from the level of African Americans, but also from the level of white Americans in our society as well.
Y'all might want to talk to black charter school operators. That's all I'm saying.
And we have.
David.
Hillary, just to change it up real quick, you mentioned a couple of times that part of the resolution or the motivation for the resolution was that charter schools are being used in certain states that you mentioned as tools of segregation. Can you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Yes, indeed. Much like was studied in the 1960s when schools are put in receivership and having to integrate, one of the things that happened is tools are being utilized to create academies, as they called them during those days. Some very similar things have been done very recently. I've had many conversations with the Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights at the Department of Education, and the suits that have had to been filed because charter schools were actually being set up in areas, Mississippi, Alabama, North Carolina, and a couple other places and whatnot. They were set up, but then they were utilized as tools to prevent African Americans.
But just to quickly follow up on that, sorry, Steve.
Real quick, I'm over time here, real quick.
Yes, very quick.
Why not address those specific schools instead of across the board?
Right, that's what I asked. Yeah. Why do a national moratorium with those specific states?
The shorthand is we have. We've been very actively involved in those lawsuits, but we're seeing it's much more broad than we might think. We have a number of good charter schools that are being pointed to here, and that's great. We're not calling for an elimination of charter schools. Keep in mind, we're talking about a moratorium. National 50 states.
Why would you call for a 50-state moratorium if the argument is that it's being used in specific states?
In a number of states across the country, it has. But not just there. Even in Wisconsin, we had major problems with charter schools. And we did invite those that created those schools in Wisconsin to come and talk to us. So the bottom line is that it's not limited to just one or two states. And with a moratorium, all we're saying is, let's take a good look. Before we set up another charter school, let's make sure that everything is in place and the kind of discrimination that we've been experiencing. It's not something that carries forward.
Steve, 20 seconds. Shavar, 20 seconds.
Here, he's already shown his true colors. We recognize that they haven't done the research and they're not listening to what the African-American community is saying. So they're showing how out of touch that they are. Sad, but true. We on the other side are going to fight our behinds off to make sure that more children get access to quality education, regardless of its charter, traditional or homeschool. Whatever is required to make sure African-American children get access to quality education, we...
Shavar, 20 seconds, go.
There are a handful of states that have very bad charter authorization, and we would love to partner with the NAACP and anybody to hold those schools accountable. Excellent. But we would also love to partner with the NAACP to hold traditional public schools that have failed Black and brown families for decades accountable as well.
All right.
Bottom line is the majority of public charter schools are doing great things for our kids. There are some that aren't, and we'll work with anybody to hold any school accountable to do the right thing for our
kids. All right, folks, we'll leave it right there. This is not the last time we have this conversation. I'll be back on News 1 Now, just a moment, talking Black Lives Matter, laying out an agenda for America. 15 before top of the hour, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
A lot of folks have said Black Lives Matter movement doesn't have an agenda, but that's actually not true. A number of organizations who fall under that particular banner have released a number of items and actually have worked on those issues and actually improved on those issues. Well, yesterday, a consortium, if you will, of more than 50 organizations released an agenda calling for a variety of things, including in the war on Black people, reparations, divestment from harmful institutions, economic justice for all, community control laws, independent Black political power. Right now, I want to bring up DJ McHarris, a member of M4BL, which means Movement for Black Lives. She helped orchestrate these demands and joined us via FaceTime from Brooklyn. And of course, our panel here as well. DJ, so what was the impetus for this? Because Campaign Zero put together a list of issues. I know the New York Justice League. I certainly know you also, Million Hoodies. I mean, so a number of organizations have done this. How did this come about and why?
Well, first, thank you for having me on. I want to say that this platform builds on the legacy of the Black radical tradition. And the reason why this platform is coming together, because organizations across the country decided to form a united front and to struggle around what was the set of demands and priorities that needed to be put forth, particularly in this current political moment. And so what you see here and what people are seeing across the country is really the collection of policy recommendations, of demands that are really co-created, co-developed in deep collaboration with organizations across the country. We're talking large networks, grassroots organizations, movement-led and movement-centered organizations, Black-led, Black-centered organizations across the country. We're at a point now where this document, this platform has been co-created by about 30 organizations that are part of United Front and endorsed by an additional 30 organizations. And so this really is an articulation to the world of what this movement is calling for, a political vision, a set of demands, and a set of policy recommendations that we believe will help us move towards those demands.
Is it a matter of, was it in response to any level of criticism saying that this movement was too decentralized, was not organized enough?
It was never in response to criticism. Our communities, our movement has always been talking in our kitchens, in our classrooms, in our movement spaces about what's the political vision that we need to articulate, what are the demands that we need to surface. And this movement has always been in community and struggle and in unity, thinking about what are the demands that we need to surface to this country and to the world. And so we took a process and a period of time that really allowed for us to be collaborative, that allowed us to engage in meaningful struggle. This platform has been really over a year in the making. It's been a platform that allowed for people across the country from various different organizations, but that we're talking about Black lives, to engage and struggle with one another, to talk about how do we co-create a platform that speaks to this Black suffering, but for all Black lives, but that also helps moves us towards Black liberation.
Faraji, your assessment of this this agenda?
Well, I think it's a good agenda. I mean, I think it's a good start, but you know, we have to keep in mind that when you're talking about the struggle of Black people, there have been many agendas. I can go back to the Million Man March of 95, the 20th anniversary. There's been many agendas put on the table. I don't think it's a problem of us determining what should be done. I think it's a problem of
how
us figuring
done.
Right. Well, yeah, but but at the end of the day, we need to be unified. We need to say to ourselves, what is the agenda that we're going to adopt? Or what part of the of each of these agendas are we going to adopt? But this is getting young activists, I'm speaking of black activists, mm-hmm. in a way of thinking more strategically about how to go and get political power. And that's the essential result.
But 2 points. One, I'll say this. To say there's a war on black people, I think we have to be cautious with certain statements. I think it almost creates a sense of divisiveness. Two, I was talking to Dr. Davis during a commercial break and had a very interesting conversation, which you both very much agree. I think, and to your point also, we have to begin to teach and develop a culture of more engagement in the process overall, having individuals run for office, and really learning the entire process, period. I think a lot of people sensationalize things, and we're just talking about our generation as a soundbite generation. We have to start to understand how the process actually works to actually get things done.
Well, personally, I agree with the term, it's a war on black people, because I really believe that there is a war on black people. I believe my life is in danger, and my son's lives are in danger every time they step out of the door. But I also want to commend this group for pushing the envelope, especially in terms of advancing the argument for reparations. This is an argument that I think needs to be addressed in this country.
Oh, absolutely.
I am so tired of people talking about healing and reconciliation when we haven't had truth and we haven't had reparations. We need that, and this is a great place to start that discussion.
If I can ask a question to Ms. McCarris. I would like to know if your organization is going to have members run for office, engage in the formal political process, and if not, why, and if so, when?
So, thank you for that question. I just wanted to say something really quickly, particularly towards the naming of the war on black people.
And I got about 45 seconds, so go ahead.
We believe that we can't fight or end a problem that we can't name. And so from enslavement to colonialism to mass incarceration, we believe that there's an ongoing unnamed and named war against black people. And in terms of elected office, we're part of a decentralized movement. And what we believe is that folks across this movement will take on different elements of what it means to push for political issues, what it means to push for our demands and for an agenda. So while I will not be running for elected office, there's various different parts of this movement that we believe if they can embody what it means to protect, what it means to defend black lives, that they will push for it in various different ways.
Unfortunately, folks, I got to leave it there. We'll certainly be following up on this as well. Tanjanae, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. When we come back, we'll talk about online apps that can help you register to vote. News One Now, TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Our focus, folks, is hashtag one vote, trying to make sure you are set when it comes to voting this November. Joining us right now is Stephanie Humphrey, breaking down some, of course, some apps that can help you get registered to vote. You don't have to sit around and go to the grocery store to
don't
do it.
Now
you use technology.
App.
Stephanie, what you got?
Well, I got Register to Vote, Mark Cuban endorsed. It basically, you just scan your barcode on your ID, on your state-issued ID, your driver's license, and it imports all of that information, and you register to vote in 30 seconds.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, so it's available for any of the states that already have online voter registration. So right now there are about 30 states that have online voter registration. If your state is included in that, you can register, but it is only available for iOS, so only iPhone users can use it right now.
All right, sorry you Android folks. Get an iPhone.
Get an iPhone, that's
right.
Okay,
what's next?
I like Latinos Vote and Voto Latino, two different apps, but anyone can use them. You don't have to be Latino to use them. The National Council of La Raza sponsors Latinos Vote. And what I like about this one is that you don't necessarily have to have a state-issued ID. You can go by the last four digits of your social. It'll scan all of that information in, print the application out, and you can mail it into them. But they also allow you to sign up for text alerts so they can remind you, hey, it's time to go vote. Get out there, voter, you know, today is your polling day. So I like that you get the text alerts to remember to vote.
Next up.
And of course, Rock the Vote. Been around for 26 years, targeting millennials, trying to get them to vote. I like this one because there's all types of information about if you're registered, you can check your status, you can register if you haven't, and it gives you information for students because if you're away at school, it can be a little bit tricky to, you know, vote in your hometown and different things like that. There's also military information for folks overseas as well.
All right, then. And so, also, what was it, something of Lincoln? What was that app? I have to find it. Now, a couple of others that folks sent me that are out there. Again, so our whole point, folks, over the next less than 100 days before the election is to give you all of these tools. Yeah, so what we do tomorrow is we're going to give you the first 10 states, the deadline voter registration. And so we'll give it to you tomorrow. And so every day we'll have something tied to voting. Mm-hmm. So tomorrow on News One Now, we'll break down the first 10 states and we'll give you those actual dates. And so you need to be listening for your state. Got to go to a break right now. We'll be back in 60 seconds. News One Now, TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
All right, y'all, birthdays right now. WNBA star, Dallas Wings player Skylar Diggs turned 26.
Nice.
Look at you, really?
Nice.
You ain't saying because she's 26. You saying because she's fine. It ain't got nothing to do with her being 26.
Shout out to Skylar.
Ain't nothing about it. She is fine.
Look, he's not backing down.
She is fine. Detroit Lions star Golden Tate turns 28. Angela Conwell from Young and the Restless turns 33 years old. On this day in history, 1920, black millionaire William Leitsdorf Jr. launches the first steamboat in the San Francisco Bay. 1920, Marcus Garvey unveils his Back to Africa program as a way to escape American racism. 1982, Jackie Robinson honored with a commemorative U.S. postal stamp. Tomorrow, folks, again, we'll preview the National Urban League's annual convention with Mark Morier, the CEO, plus NABJ also begins their convention, National Association of Black Journalists. We'll talk with their president as well, plus One Vote, making sure you're registered to vote as well. I gotta go. Send me a tweet. Hit me on Facebook. Act a fool. I'ma cut you.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.